Hey there, this is Catherine Mary Stewart, and you're listening to The Medley with Blake Crash Priddle.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Medley. I'm Blake Crash Priddle, and this week's guest is Canadian actress, writer, and director Catherine Mary Stewart. Some of her credits include popular 80s movies, including The Apple, Night of the Comet, The Last Starfighter, and my favorite 80s comedy movie, Weekend at Bernie's. We're going to hear some behind-the-scenes stories from that very funny yet very absurd movie, and we're also going to hear some of her secrets behind her successful career, as well as some projects that she's currently working on. How did your acting career begin?
So I grew up in Edmonton, and in high school I was training as a dancer, and so instead of going off to university, I went to London and enrolled in a performing arts school there that focused on dance, but was also like singing and theater and a bunch of other stuff. And while I was in London taking these classes, I, you know, in Edmonton, I'd been in a dance company, and we traveled all over the world, really. But so London, I decided to really spread my wings a little bit and try and see what the rest of the world was like in the world of dance. I happened to go to this sort of catacall audition for dancers in London. I had no idea what it was about. It was something that I just sort of found out about that morning and headed off there with a couple of my classmates, and found myself in the middle of this audition with about 200 other dancers. And I'm doing the audition, and the director kind of pulls me out of the crowd and asks me if I can act. And I said yes, because I'm not going to say no. And he had me audition for the lead role of this movie, which I ended up getting. And then shooting in Berlin for a couple of months back in 1979.
What was the name of that movie?
It was called The Apple. It was a futuristic rock musical.
I read about it, and it said it took place in 1994, which, strangely enough, is the year that I was born.
Yeah, at that time, I guess since 1979, they felt like 1994 was way in the distant future, but it makes you laugh now. But I mean, it's a weird movie, but it got me started on my career path, so I can't complain. And you know, since the early 2000s, it's become kind of a cult film. Quentin Tarantino has a podcast that he does that they talk about The Apple in one episode. What a cult film it has become. So it's just weird, you know, that after all these years, and I think part of the reason it's a cult film is because it is so kind of weird. You know, what the heck? It's funny.
Well, there's lots of cult films, especially from the 80s. And another very popular 80s film that you were in was Weekend at Bernie's, where you played Gwen, one of the main characters' girlfriends. Tell us about how you got that role, because that movie is hilarious.
That was a movie that I just auditioned for in a sort of a regular way. I didn't have to. It was kind of like they had me audition with Jonathan Silverman. I didn't have to do a bunch of auditions leading up to it, so that was nice. I'd kind of cemented somewhat of a career up to that point, so they knew who I was. And they just wanted me to read with Jonathan Silverman to see what our chemistry was like or something like that. So it was me, Jonathan, and Ted Kotcheff, the director. And I went in, and I was excited about it because it was, you know, kind of a big movie, and it was a different genre than I had been associated with. It was more comedy, sort of slapstick comedy, and I really wanted to kind of explore that, I guess. I went and did the audition. I read with Jonathan, and I left thinking that I totally screwed it up. And I was just like devastated. And I called my manager and I said, please call them up and ask them if I could come back and try again. And I just thought I'd screwed it up. And so you can imagine what a relief it was when I was told that I got the role. So that was good.
What was your favorite scene to film in that movie? There was one scene that I thought was pretty funny where you and the character Richard were making out on the beach and Bernie's body floated up on the shore on the waves. And Richard said, oh, my God, this can't be happening to me. And you say, it's happening to both of us.
That may have been my favorite scene. That and the previous scene in the lighthouse. That was so much fun because it was sort of my time, my one-on-one time with the Richard character, and kind of playing around and making things up as we went. And I just really, really had a good time. I mean, Jonathan and I got along really well, so he was a lot of fun to work with. There's him toppling down the lighthouse stairs, and and Ted Kotcheff loved the fact that I could laugh so spontaneously because I thought it was hilarious. So that was fun. And then the scene that leads into the scene on the beach where Bernie washes up on the shore right behind us, and I'm completely oblivious to it, thinking that, you know, Richard's just getting really passionate, but he's just scared. He's like freaked out that Bernie is washed up. So I would say those two scenes are my favorite. Yeah.
Yeah, they were my favorite as well. I also liked the one where they took him water skiing, I'll bet accidentally, or the one where one of the guys tied a fishing line to Bernie's hand to make it look like he was waving, and at the same time it was hitting him with fly swatter, which I don't think you were in that scene, but that had me howling pretty hard.
Yeah. No, the fly swatter, was that, I mean, I remember the one at the pool where they're theoretically playing a game, a board game or something on the deck, and he's waving to people.
Yeah, that was
that
it.
Was pretty funny too. But the fly swatter, yeah. Yeah. And then there's the fly swatter scene too, where, I see what you're saying. Yes, that's right. It was all the same scene. He was like, Bernie must have been getting pretty ripe by then. So there's flies being attracted to him. Yeah, that was pretty funny. But no, I wasn't in that scene.
Oh, there's lots of funny scenes. I mean, it's one of those movies where it's so stupid, it's funny, but you just have to laugh.
I was just going to say, when I first read the script, I thought it was kind of over the top, especially the scene where Bernie is being dragged behind the boat and he's hitting into the buoys and stuff like that. And they hear this clanging noise and they're not sure what that is. I thought, oh my God, that's so gross. But it's like one of the most popular scenes in the movie as well. And one of the most famous. So what do I know about this kind of comedy?
Was anyone else in your family in the entertainment industry prior to you becoming an actress that inspired your passion?
There really wasn't. I mean, I came from a family of academics. Both my parents were professors, and both my brothers were like top honor students. And then I sort of showed up, and I have to give all the credit to my mother because she realized that I wasn't, I didn't like school. I was bored in school. I just didn't like it. So she's the one who got me into dance originally, which I fought her all the way. But the good mother that she was, she kind of insisted. And if I didn't like it, that would be fine. I didn't have to do it. But she thought that that was a great pathway for me. And she was exactly right, because I took to it like a duck to water. And she even encouraged me to start taking drama classes in junior high school, which I also said, no way am I going to stand up in front of a whole bunch of kids in class and, you know, recite Shakespeare or something. But she convinced me to at least try it. And I felt like I was home. I mean, she just knew instinctually what to do with me, thank goodness, because that's, you know, I think that a lot of parents will, if their kid says, I don't want to do it, they'll go, oh, okay. But they don't really know what they want. I mean, I'm a perfect example. I didn't have a clue. And if she hadn't insisted, I don't know what I would be doing right now.
I wanted to talk a bit about your brothers. You'd mentioned that they're both academics, and I know one of them very well used to host Daily Planet, Alan Nursall, and he was also the director of Science North. I saw him a couple of times when I would go to Science North as a kid because I used to live in Espanola, which is just outside of Sudbury, and we would, when I'd go there, we'd run into each other sometimes and we'd just make small talk and stuff, and it's a small world.
Nice. I love that. I love that. We were just in Edmonton at his retirement celebration. He went from Science North to TELUS World of Science in Edmonton, and that he was CEO and president of for 10 years. So that's so cool that you saw him in Sudbury. That was quite a place, that Science North.
So I assume that you visited Science North a couple of times?
Oh, yeah. Well, he was there for something like 20 years. So, yeah, we'd been there several times. Yeah, I love that place. As a matter of fact, years and years ago, he and I did some sort of Science North fashion show. I think they were trying to raise money for something rather. And he and I walked down the platform, whatever you call that thing, for models in these Sudbury high fashion things. So that was really fun. But yeah, oh no, I've been there many times, yes.
Me too. I especially like looking at the animals and that computer program that predicts how tall you're going to be. I remember doing that as a kid and it said I was going to be 6'10". You know, they weren't quite accurate.
Ooh.
I'm 6'4".
That's pretty tall still, but Alan is 6'4", as a matter of fact.
It really is a small world, isn't it? Tell us about some of the other roles that you have. I know that you've been in quite a few movies that were associated with the 80s.
Yeah, the 80s were a great decade for me. So the first movie that I did was The Apple. And then I went to Edmonton and did a movie called, it was just this little sort of comedy about skiing. It was in the era of, there was a lot of kind of professional ski movies with really cool skiing techniques and camera techniques and stuff like that of these really good skiers. But this was sort of a combination of a comedy slash one of those kind of movies, sort of extreme skiing movies, and it had sort of a narrative. So I did that when I was in Edmonton right after The Apple. And then the first movie that I did in Los Angeles when I arrived in Los Angeles in like 1981 was The Last Starfighter. I didn't do it. We shot it in 1983. So The Last Starfighter, which is still one of those, it's a small movie, but it's still very resilient and has a really solid fan base. I do these conventions and there's so many like men that are kind of middle-aged now that watched it when they were a kid and it was so inspiring to them. Are you familiar with that movie?
No, I haven't watched it yet, but that's something I'm going to have to add to my list of movies to watch. I have a whole list on my phone.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, you should watch that one because it's just a lot of fun. And so I did Knight Rider, the TV show. I did Knight Flyers, a movie. Early on, I did Knight Hawks. And I just had this small role where I get blown up. I'm trying to sell Rutger Hauer's character some perfume, and he blows me up. It kind of establishes what a rotten guy he is. Anywho, so yeah, the Last Starfighter, it's a very sweet, very 80s kind of story about a kid from a trailer park who plays this, video game, and he gets super good at it. And unbeknownst to him, it's kind of a recruiting device for this alien in outer space that's fighting this universal war, basically. And the character is played by Robert Preston, who is an iconic actor. In fact, it was the last movie he did. But also a really interesting little note about The Last Starfighter is it was like the first movie to attempt to use CGI special effects on the level that it used them. I mean, Tron came out at around the same time, and they talked about how advanced the special effects were for Tron. But as simple as the effects look in The Last Starfighter, they were really much more complex and brand new. And it's kind of known for it's the CGI kind of setting the foundation for what you see today.
I mean, you watch old CGI cartoons like Toy Story or old CGI video games, and you're thinking, wow, they look almost ancient in comparison to what we have today.
Yes, there's no question. And you'll feel the same way when you watch The Last Starfighter, but it's kind of cool that we were, you know, kind of the first to even attempt it, because they weren't sure if they were going to use just regular models, special effects, and while we were shooting, there was these, you know, computer whizzes somewhere just creating programs to try to make it work. So it's just it's a cool fact about it. And you know, it does have quite a solid fan base because it's an inspiring movie for kids, especially at that age. But they've been talking a while about doing a sequel, which would be really fun. And it would kind of be the next generation. So Lance Guest, who plays my boyfriend Alex in it, and I it would be our story kind of continued in the next generation.
I read on your bio that in the early 80s, you also had a role in a soap opera, Days of Our Lives. Did that feel different to be in a soap opera compared to the other projects and other TV shows and movies that you were a part of?
Yeah, that was one of the hardest jobs I've ever done. I mean, I was on it for 2 years. If you watch Days of Our Lives, the Brady family became sort of like the big family in the show. And I was Kayla Brady. They were introducing these characters when I came on. I haven't been on they've continued the characters with a different actor. But if you shoot a movie, say it's 90 minutes, usually they shoot it over a period of a couple of months. With a 60-minute soap opera, they shoot it in one day. So which is like let's say it's a, 100-page script or whatever it is, 60 to 100-page script. If you have a heavy storyline, if they're like really focusing on your character, as they sometimes do in soap operas, you might have to memorize like 50 pages of dialogue in a day. And have to get it out of your mouth in a day. And I found that extremely challenging. So I have huge admiration for soap opera actors.
And by that time, they had switched to pre-recording the episodes. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, they weren't live. I mean, in the very beginning when soap operas were around, they were like 15 minutes and they were live. But they were called soap operas because the ads that they traditionally used for soap operas on early television were soap.
Yeah, I heard about that in radio school. They said that a lot of early soap operas on the radio were sponsored by Tide and mostly laundry soaps.
Yeah, I think so. And then they started out on radio, and then they had these short things on camera. So yeah, and now, I think in the 80s, like the 70s and 80s and 90s, they were, soap operas were very, very popular. There's not very many left anymore, but Days of Our Lives is hanging in there.
Yeah, I watched that a couple of times at my babysitter's, and I used to wonder, why does my babysitter like shows about adults arguing back and forth?
Good point.
Did you have an idea for a backup career in case acting didn't work out?
I did not. Because, it's funny. My thought was, when I went into acting, when I was doing The Apple, I had no concept that this was where I was going to, this was going to be my future. It was in acting. I just thought, yeah, I'll go back to my dance when this is over. And I did temporarily, but it just kind of, the acting thing just kind of snowballed. If there was a backup career, I guess it was dance, but that sort of went out the window pretty quickly. And I had no other, nothing else really occurred to me. I live in the moment, and I have very little use for what happened yesterday. And I don't try to predict what's going to happen tomorrow. I mean, obviously I have ideas. I work towards things, but I'm not one of these people that set a whole bunch of goals for myself and, gall darn it, I'm going to hit that goal. I just kind of keep pushing the envelope, just pushing the envelope day to day. I've already written a screenplay. I've written several screenplays, actually. The most recent one I wrote with a writing partner who lives in Toronto. And it was optioned by a production company for 2.5 years. And finally, the option came up. So we've rewritten it, actually. We've done a nice rewrite and tightened it up a lot. And we're just getting ready to put it out into the world again and see what happens. We'd very much like to produce it, have it produced in Canada. So we're looking towards that. It kind of takes place in Canada. I have a couple of other ideas of things that I want to do. I want to also, if this script went through somehow, it would be a vehicle for me to direct, because I would really love to direct more. I've directed a little bit. I've directed a couple of shorts. One I wrote and produced and directed, and the other was I sort of co-directed with a friend of mine. That's something I'd love to do more of, is directing. And this, there are a couple of opportunities possibly coming up in the future. I don't even like to predict. That's the other thing about this business, is if you sort of put yourself in a position where you're depending on reaching all these goals at a certain period of time. To me, this is just me, but it sets me up for disappointment, because it's such a roller coaster ride, this industry, that you just can't depend on something coming through. I never ever talk about anything until after it's done. Because you just don't know. You never know. It's just too unpredictable. I'm really enjoying, I'm inspired, I'm excited about the projects that I have on the table in front of me, but none of them have completely come to fruition yet. So I just keep plugging away day to day.
Do you think you could tell us a little bit about your TV show idea? Like, just give us the meat and potatoes about what it's all about?
It's kind of a mother-daughter story about a woman. The mother is sort of in high finance, and the daughter is involved with social media, and they've also haven't spoken in years because of which the mother and her husband broke up. It just caused sort of a calamity within the family. They just never, and they were both very distracted by their big careers. And then they come back together with, so my daughter, when I split up with the husband, when we get divorced, I send my daughter to live with my mother on this very remote island off the coast of British Columbia. We are brought back together like 5 years later, after she's created her career and I'm just entrenched in mine, by the death of my mother, who raised her in her formative years. So it's kind of a mother-daughter redemption kind of a thing. And I use a lot of my experience as a mother. My daughter's almost 30 years old. My experience as a mom, and my partner has a lot of experience with social media. So I think we came up with a great idea.
Well, I think you did too. And I hope that it gets greenlit. I'll be sure to watch if it does.
Oh, thank you very much.
What's the most important thing that aspiring actors, writers, or directors need to know about the industry?
There's nothing black and white about it. I think if you're going to get into this industry, you need to enter with the thought that this is what you're passionate about. This is what you want to do. This is who I am. No holds barred. And ignore any sort of criticism. I mean, there's so much criticism out there. You hear about it all the time, especially with successful people. They have a project that they've been told no, 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 and years later it finally goes through and it's the biggest hit ever or something like that. You hear that kind of story all the time. Same as being an actor, you need to be confident in who you are as an actor and who you are as a human being. So many people have fallen into that trap of trying to be what they think the industry wants them to be. And that's just, it's all so subjective. that all you really have as an anchor is yourself and believing in yourself. And and there's so much rejection, which I sort of touched on by people saying no. I mean, you get maybe 1% of the auditions that you audition for, you know, the jobs that you audition for. So you can't beat yourself up about that either. You just have to keep moving forward. And that's the toughest part, is having enough sort of faith or not letting it beat you up. But it's tough. It's a dog eat dog world, that's for sure.
Is there a way that people can keep up to date with you on social media?
Yes, I am on Facebook, which I, Catherine Mary Stewart. I have a fan page there. I'm on Twitter. My handle is CMSALL. I'm on Instagram, Catherine Mary Stewart, and I just finished building my latest and greatest website, which is CatherineMaryStewart.com. So, and there you can, you know, read up about me. I'm trying to keep up to date with what's going on. I just did a convention in Seattle. I posted a whole bunch of photos from that. And, you know, where you can find me and in latest interviews and things like that. And also I have a fan section where you can buy photographs if you want to. Or I also have DVDs. And, you know, there's also a section where if you come up with an idea of something or that you don't see it on the site, you can ask me if I have something else for you to sign.
Catherine, it was a huge honor to have you on the show. Thank you so very much for joining us, and we wish you all the best of luck with your future endeavors.
Thank you, Blake, and thanks for hanging in there with me.
And that was Canadian actress, writer, and director Catherine Mary Stewart. We hope you enjoyed this edition of The Medley. Until next time, here at The Medley, we're all kinds of different.